Hello, Iconic listeners. This is JM, and I just wanted to let you know that we have a special for our listeners in July. Pelgrane Press has two new books that are available for pre-order, The Book of Ages and Loot Harder. Both are available for pre-order right now on Pelgrane's site. And for the Iconic listeners, Pelgrane has provided a code to get you 10% off both books if you pre-order in the month of July. We will put that code in the show notes for this episode. I've had a chance to look through both books just briefly, and they both look fantastic. You can expect reviews and discussions on both Loot Harder and the Book of Ages later in the year from Iconic, but right now we have this great deal for you. So check the show notes, go over to pelgranepress.com and check out Loot Harder and the Book of Ages. Enjoy the show.
With your hosts, JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick and Mark.
Hey.
Hello. Well, we got a great show for you today. We are going back to one of our... We're looking at that iconic look. We're looking at a single icon with an eye towards running a focused campaign around a single icon. Basically limiting the icon choices from the start, kind of like the article that was posted about running a 7-icon game instead of a 13-icon game. So today we're going to look at the Diabolist, just kind of talk about her, the monsters that she's associated with, enemies, how we would each run a Diabolist-focused game kind of from the start. And again, we'll just kind of reiterate, this is kind of the style of game where you would come to the table and say, all right, guys, this game is going to have a pretty heavy focus on the Diabolist. Here are 5 or 7 icons kind of connected around that. Let's build characters and kind of go forward from that. What do you guys think about running that style of game?
I like playing those types of games. I like running those types of games. I will say that you frequently have to make a pitch for that to the players mm-hmm. before you commit to actually playing it. Even when you're in the trying to figure out what type of game it is that you want to play, say, okay, these are a couple of different options. We want to do something 13th Age. What mm-hmm. if these are a couple of different rumors that we've heard or something like that. And this is what we're going to try to make this campaign about.
Yeah, I mean, you've definitely got to set that up at the start mm-hmm. so that you have player buy-in and players who are willing to build characters that are connected to that. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I like it. As I say, the Diabolist. But yeah, this is good for a homebrew, not a convention or one shot where you're demoing the game and people are going to play everything. It's, hey, we're going to finish up this campaign in a few weeks. Here's an idea that I'd like to run and get the buy-in. Because without the buy-in, it's harder, I think, to run it. Because you know, you always get that. No, I want to be a follower of this. Like, well, that doesn't really fit the theme of this one. So I like that.
You always get the guy who wants to play the Gaijin in a Legend of the Five Rings game.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's start talking about the Diabolist. All right, so the Diabolist is one of the core 13th Age icons. We got her right at the start of the 13th Age core rulebook. One of the first ones you come across. The book kind of describes her as, she summons demons. Doesn't seem to be a large scale summoning of demons. She has a personal motivation for it. Somewhere between chaotic neutral-ish and chaotic evil, if we were going to go back to D&D. If you guys are not familiar with that, we're kind of calling it random evil would be a good explanation for it. But again, it seems to be random and personal, not necessarily, kill the great gold worm and release all the demons.
Not
but
yet.
It could be.
Not
right?
yet.
It could be, exactly. So let's kind of start with what are your thoughts on the Diabolist? Both as a player, as a GM.
The way I see her, she's crazy from dabbling too much in the Abyss.
Okay.
Petty and cruel. I think she's a great antagonist for the group. Or if you want to go off the rails in that direction and have a group that worships her claws. Yeah. And then the surprising kind, but that is either because she's chaos and weird things happen, or she does it to toy with people and, oh, I'll be kind to you. So when I'm cruel, it's going to up the pain even more. Mm. Kind of play with the people.
What about a idea of maybe it being a balance where she has to do these random acts of kindness to kind of pay for or balance?
Yeah, it could be a balance. It could be, I think we'll talk about it later with the different aspects we're looking at, where maybe it's her true self coming through the corruption, trying to, you know, that 2% that's not total chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, and there's so many different ways you can play it because of that. I mean, she's chaotic, so you can play her kind. I just don't see her being kind to her followers. She's cruel to everyone. Doesn't matter. And if she's kind, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
Either it's just random, woohoo, I'm crazy, or
there's a method to it.
There's a method, and you just don't understand it.
And I should also point out, these are all going to be our own opinions and own campaign takes on using the Diabolist, and hopefully they are fun fodder for all of you who plan to either play with an iconic relationship with the Diabolist or use her as a kind of a main figure in your campaign. Nick, what are your thoughts on the Diabolist as a player of 13th Age?
Yeah. When you look at the 9x9 grid that they had in the core book, mm-hmm. She was definitely well seated into that lower right corner where, you know, chaotic evil. And both as a player and as someone who runs games, I struggle very well portraying something that's truly, truly evil, evil. And I love redemption arcs in both as players and even in seeing what's happening in the NPCs and the world around me. So I would probably portray her as someone who has been tainted by that which she's working with. Like, she maybe stepped into this role of the Diabolist as a way of, as I think about it, as a way of balancing this good and chaos, or the world and chaos, the hell and the Dragon Empire. And part of balance is there has to be some bit of chaos.
Yeah.
And so she's trying to maybe release some of that chaotic pressure into the world in a controlled way to bring about balance, but she's playing with chaos. And as a result of which, she's being tainted by it.
So you'd move her a little more towards the middle of that.
Yeah.
Cool.
But also very tainted.
Yes.
Sometimes it's hard to play evil. Even when you're the GM trying to, okay, I got to play the bad guy so they can play off it. There's moments, and I've talked to Jam in the past about this. In fact, I had a character in another game completely went off the rocker, and I had to stop playing him. I was like, I can't do that again.
Right.
Yeah.
To me, that you come to the table to have fun. Mm-hmm. And personally, when you start kind of going down that road of what is evil and the full embodiment of that, it takes a turn and stops being so much fun. So I would want to try to definitely give the Diabolist some sort of redemptive arc to kind of keep things at that fun level.
Well, this is an interesting conversation that we could probably do a whole nother show, but I feel like, at least personally in my games, like evil, especially going back to like the roots of D&D, like evil wasn't just this abstract concept, right? There were planes of evil. There were creatures that were irredeemably evil. Mm-hmm. And part of being an adventurer, not a murder hobo, but an adventurer was saying,
okay, warn me next time you say murder hobo.
Was like, you know, if you were the paladin who could detect evil, like evil was an ontological reality in, it is an ontological reality in Gygaxian fantasy, that it's like, no, that thing is evil. When it comes up, when you sense evil, which we don't have in 13th Age, but you know, I'm going, you know, you can say, no, that thing is purely evil. And so I guess for me, it's one of the things I enjoy about like evil icons is being able to go, no, like this is a reality in this world. Like it's not all shades of gray. There are some very like shiny bits of the Dragon Empire, the Crusade, not the Crusader. That's what does that say about me? The Great Gold Worm, you know, that kind of stuff. And there are some hardcore evil. Now, the Diabolist doesn't fall in that one for me. I think if I were to use her in a campaign, I see her because it's very personal acts of evil, and especially when it comes to her true danger, I feel like something has happened, and the Diabolist, whether it's a he or a she or, you know, some androgynous being, is out for revenge. And she is using evil in kind of the service of what she sees as a very like righteous act of justice, but it's becoming more this dark vengeance sort of thing. Like, you know, the road to the abyss is paved with good intentions, and the demons, I mean, it's probably more devil territory, but the demons are just savvy enough to go, oh yeah, we'll totally help you with that. Sure. My idea, and we'll
next
get
into episode.
Yeah. When we get to the end of this episode where we talk about campaign ideas, that was kind of my idea, is that maybe she was a different icon in the 12th age. And because of how that ended, she became the Diabolist of the 13th age. And we'll talk a little bit more.
So maybe not world dominion, but I've got something against you.
Yeah, some other icon very personally.
You know, and I'm going to take you down.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of times maybe this just goes back to my love of Greek myth, but we tend to see the icons as these giant organizations and their own kind of lofty stuff. But you know what, she's just doing this because of something like for a very human reason, just on a power scale that we can't understand. Like,
are you saying the icons are flawed?
Oh yeah, totally.
all the more reason not to upset her on a personal level.
Yeah. All right. But going back to earlier editions of D&D's, and especially if we were going to port the iconic system into a different game or run a different world in 13th age. Mm-hmm. I was kind of reading through this. I kind of feel she's got some Loth vibes to her, like chaotic, associated with demons, sometimes does something completely out of character for one of her followers.
Yeah. I mean, she was known, you know, Queen of the Abyss, you know, that whole
Queen of the Demon Web Pits.
Demon Web Pip, kind of demon. Yeah. Demons were allowed to be summoned, and the whole Dregloth thing. And yeah.
If you were in a user in a different setting, like say if you were in a user in Forgotten Realms, what would you associate the Diabolist with?
Mm. Yeah, I mean that's probably a very good example of Loth or something like that, a being like that. Maybe not necessarily with spiders, but that has demons and that's one thing I thought about her with being personal is. I think maybe she'd like to open up and let more demons through, but I think she also knows her own limit of what she can control.
Well, that's
if I just open this up, I can't control these demons, and I, you know, the whole pure chaos is destruction. Well, I want to be able to rule over something.
So. Yeah, that would be an interesting true danger to explore in a 13th age campaign. What would push the Diabolist to no longer put those self limits of control on, like if the players pushed the button hard enough, would she just go off the rails? Who knows?
Yeah.
So let's kind of talk a little bit about where in the world the Diabolist is located. I mean, obviously we talked a lot about the abyss and you know, hopefully we get a little bit more information on that in like Book of Demons, maybe something touching on that in Overworld and beyond, or, you know, just for me, go back to all of my Planescape stuff. That's where I would take a lot of the Abyss material from.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But each icon has a stronghold, if you will, in the Dragon Empire or an area of influence. And the one for the Diabolist is the Hellmarsh. Nick, you want to tell us a little bit about the Hellmarsh?
Sure. It sits on the far, like if you're looking at the Dragon Empire map, it sits on the far left side of that, over there near Forge, near Anvil. And it's not a fun place to go. Paths and roads and entryways tend to shift and change. It's a lot of stuff is unknown about it. Most of the information coming out about the Hellmarsh is subject to rumors, and you're never really sure if you can trust the information that you're getting. But that's where she sets up camp. There's a hellhole, a major hellhole that has erupted forth in that area. And most hellholes are kind of constrained to a relatively small space, maybe a couple miles. But this one has expanded a little bit further than that. The Crusader hasn't had a chance to get in there yet to cap it off. But that's where she kind of sets up her shop at.
How would you guys use the Hellmarsh in a game?
It's always good, you know, with a name like that and knowing even if the rumors are only 25% true, Why would I go in there? Well, actually, you send them on those fetch missions, you know, hey, you need to go get this. You know, Crusader, hey, one of my paladins went in there 10 years ago and never came out. I need you to go recover his sword.
Mm-hmm. Or if you want this sword, here's where it is.
Right. Yes.
You have a PC who really wants X weapon. Cool. Here's where it is. Some paladin of mine went into Hell Marshes.
Never came back. So you need to go recover it. And it would be just a very weird place. You know, my example, the very reality bending, nothing's the same kind of picture that Harry Potter scene where they're walking on the, you know, the stairs go upside down. I forget the artist who did those.
Oh, the M.C. Escher's kind of stuff?
Yeah, you know, where things are just weird and, you know, and as you turn a corridor, suddenly it's changed. It's not the same corridor because it's chaos. You shouldn't have just a nice plain castle that is kind of ruined and musty. No, it's reality mind-bending. You might go insane.
Yeah, which kind of ties into, whenever I thought about the Hellmarsh and kind of where the Diabolus would live, I have this image of like a bronze palace, like covered in verdigris, just slowly sinking into the marsh, but like as a cap on like her like personal hell portal. But I think that comes from a lot of like Warhammer and Warhammer 40K images where you have the realm of chaos and everything's, you know, baroque and in, you know, these bronze.
Yeah.
What about you, Nick?
Well, I was kind of envisioning playing up or maybe even introducing a new rumor that rather than it being a hellhole that has erupted there, there's actually that's the point where this world actually joins up with the realm of chaos. And so her citadel functions more like a bridge. And she's more or less maybe a gatekeeper there, or at least part of her responsibility there is to kind of keep chaos at bay. And the marsh itself would shift and move around that, but it's a stationary place. You just never can really remember how you got there.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Another thought as I read through this and had some ideas and how to use it in a campaign, instead of just going from hours to the abyss, what if these stretched and changed time to where as you went through the hellhole, you could go to the 12th or the 10th age before you get there, you know, that whole warp time along with it.
So you're saying the first age was so bad it is hell?
Who knows? Who knows? Or just to get there, you travel through the time. I mean, that's another...
Like a well-played, petrified, stratified sort of...
Yeah, or just like who knows, through. You know? And I had the idea too of... I don't think I put it with the other one. What if a hellhole appeared in a Stone Thief and it was mobile?
Like in a living dungeon?
In a living dungeon.
Yeah, I had that idea too.
Now it moves about.
Yeah.
That would be...
I now want to design...
I tip my hat to Gareth.
A demonically corrupted living dungeon. I think that would be perfect. Let's expand a little more. So we've kind of got locations, the Abyss and the Hellmarsh. Mm-hmm. We've got kind of an idea of how each of us would run with the Diabolus as a primary antagonist, or in Nick's case, possibly redeemable protagonist from the iconic perspective, not like actual protagonist. What do you guys see as kind of the main enemies or the main opposition to the Diabolist's plan?
Well, the Crusader's obvious.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good one.
So
yeah, Mark.
And
Mark,
I think Mark if you really dig into the Crusader, he's, you know, I know this is radio, but my fingers are about half an inch apart. He's this close to becoming the new Diabolist, I think.
Well, that plays into my campaign idea.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. The Great Gold Worm, because he's trying to stop it.
Yeah. The priestess, you know, seems pretty diametrically opposed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
that was kind of my... I feel like if we went into it saying the priestess is going to try and redeem the Diabolus, that's almost a little too easy, a little too on the nose.
Tropish.
Yeah. My idea is that what if the Diabolus and the priestess in the previous age were related somehow, and that maybe in order to bring the gods of light and build Santa Cora, something had to be sacrificed, and the priestess ends up sacrificing whoever the icon that the Diabolist was, and now the Diabolist.
Yeah, you were thinking like sisters.
Yeah, sisters, something like that.
And I played off that where I thought, well, what if they're mother-daughter, and the mother sacrificed herself, became the diabolist. The daughter's now the priestess and needs to save her mother.
See, I don't want to say, I don't think there is salvation. I think that it's all vengeance.
But, yeah. You never know, yeah. And yeah, maybe, no. Well, it doesn't say that she was a willing sacrifice.
That is true.
So maybe the daughter's the diabolist and she wants to get back at her mother who left her on the altar, literally.
Yes, and...
Or, you know, father, you know.
Well, and what if this happened because the Lich King is the dad and he's the one that sacrificed his daughter and that's how he became the Lich King and she became the Abelist.
Now we got a whole, like, as the 13th
age
you turns.
Like the Greek gods, you know, they're all.
Yeah, no, it's all, the family tree is basically a line.
Yeah. Single branch.
That's right. It doesn't split. What about you, Nick? What are your? I know you have latched onto the redemption aspect of things. Yeah. So, kind of, how would you see the enemies kind of interacting? Like, what enemies would you set up if you were doing a small icon game?
Well, I think, you know, like we talked about already, the Crusader, the Great Gold Worm, the Priestess, I probably would throw the Druid in there as well, as each one of these hell holes is laying waste to nature and even to the point where they may be irrecoverable destruction. But I probably would paint that relationship between her and those other icons as largely misunderstood. Like, they all look at her and think that she's this bad person and that she's evil. And they just don't get that she's really trying to bring about balance. And they just keep getting in her way. And so she has to keep fighting back against them in order to be able to keep doing her job and her duty and her responsibility. Mm. And that's to kind of keep chaos from overbalancing things and destroying the world.
And I like that. I like that balance and duty aspect of it a lot. So how do you see their organizations sort of interacting?
So, you know, basically, if you were to take that idea and then just reduce the scale a little bit, you're going to have warring factions from each one of those different groups who are, they all have their own take on it. It's the compounded misunderstanding. And so you're going to have a group of people who are working for the Crusader see a group of diabolists who are trying to open up a hellhole as a way of relieving a little bit of chaotic pressure. And they're going to be like, no, we got to stop you. And so conflict ensues.
Yeah.
Crusader smash.
Yeah. Mark doesn't think that there is any interaction just on the battlefield, which is, I mean,
that's a Crusader.
That's, yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah.
I actually would put the priestess in that role. Like, if the priestess and the diabolist are tied together somehow, maybe that's the priestess's standing orders. And everybody's like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense, right? The gods of light, they stand against the demons and really... It's something a little bit darker than that.
But I like the idea of the relationship between the Diabolist and the Great Gold Worm being one of mostly like mutual ignoring each other, because the Great Gold Worm is kind of in the way of her work, but he's asleep and plugging the hole. So I don't know, we'll just let sleeping dragons lie for now.
Yeah. So we get to the true danger. That's kind of the what if everything's going to be okay unless the Diabolist successfully corrupts someone, an icon of power. And this is kind of my idea was, what if there always has to be a diabolist? What if it isn't an icon that can lay fallow, right? Some icons go away, some come back. What if there has to be a diabolist? Because kind of playing off Nick's idea, there has to be one or else it won't just be hellholes. There'll be more abysses, right? There'll be more. There's only one Great Gold Worm, and he's currently plugging the unregulated Terran reality. If there isn't a Diabolist to kind of limit and control the demons coming out, what happens?
The kind of the worst case scenario, or one of the worst case scenarios that kind of came up in my mind was either chaos overtakes the Diabolist and she actively works as an agent of chaos instead of as an agent of balance. And either that or a hellhole opens up in maybe some of the dwarven ruins, and the dwarf king is either possessed or subdued or even replaced by a demon. And all of a sudden these underground passageways that are scattered out and woven into the foundation of the Dragon Empire are suddenly highways for demonic activity, and maybe even somehow magically extending the reach of those hellholes so that the demons can go that far. And then they sprout, then they're going to start sprouting up everywhere. And that's where I also had the idea about putting one into some sort of living dungeon.
Yeah, I just popped in my head one time. I was like, and it's mobile then, because then it's not locked down. You can move around. And what do you do if your town's now consumed by this hellhole?
Yeah.
Demonic possessed, you know, living dungeon. And you go into it and try to recover stuff. And
when demons typically take the form of whatever is around them when they erupt from it. So would it be a bunch of little demonic hellholes or a little demonic hellhole living dungeons roaming around?
Yeah, I mean, it's just
that could get really bad.
Yeah, it could be a lot of different things. So
yeah,
I picture her as being very chaotic in the true sense that she wants to do more stuff. She just doesn't have the focus to see it through.
Mm.
Crusader, very focused. You know, yeah. Hulk smash, one after the other. So he's going to do stuff. She just can't keep it together. You know, that shiny thing or, oh, squirrel, you know, so she, this opens up, that opens up. She might have a plan. It might be great. Oh, it might doom the world until the next thing pops in her head because she's just too corrupted.
Interesting.
So
sounds like she might be a little bit overwhelmed too.
Yeah, overwhelmed. Just, and then maybe that's why it can be kind of kept in check is because she can't formulate a plan and continue through it.
I feel like Nick's campaign title should be Sympathy for the Diabolist. You could get some Rolling Stones music playing in the background. So if you wanted to kind of change things up and you didn't want the Diabolist to be strictly evil, or a player wanted to have a positive relationship with the Diabolist, how would you spin it? Nick, I feel like you're leaning towards more of an ambiguous icon than a strictly evil icon.
Mm-hmm. So I would probably, if I was going to move her in that 9-grid scale, maybe towards the center, I'd put her with the druid and maybe even have them be cousins.
Okay.
Just to have that something like what you were saying about some sort of familial relation with another icon. In my mind, I would have there be a trio of the druid trying to maintain balance in the world around us with nature, the archmage trying to maintain balance between our world and the overworld, and the diabolist trying to maintain that balance between the underworld and this world. And so, I don't know, chaos has a tendency to taint. And so, you know, obviously she's going to be warring on that on a personal level with herself. But then also I see her maybe working together with those other two icons to try to make sure that everything stays in balance.
Yeah, no.
No.
I'm looking at the picture on page 270 and there's no ambiguity there.
So you would
she wants to rip your soul out and devour it. I don't know. I mean, somebody wants to have a relationship where they're fine, but you're not going to come across as good at all. And you have to really watch your group. Do you keep that hidden that you're
positive towards
the Diabolist, and there's a Crusader and, you know, some other icons in the group, you know, relationship wise in the group. So yeah. Which some people can pull it off.
If I were to play a character with a positive relationship, if the GM were to allow me to have a positive relationship, I would be, look, she's always been nice to me. Like, yeah. I would just keep handing the GM rope.
Yes. And
to see if they finally like,
in a future episode, we can talk about a character who I think would and could explain it more like lines of Nick's explanation is, oh, you just misunderstand her.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, no, I don't really want to, you know, blow up the world. I just want to siphon some of that power off to fight demons.
Yeah. Mm.
I can resist the corruption.
Fight back with their own weapon.
Yeah, that kind of thing. That's how I'd play it for other characters,
yeah.
You know.
Well, and the thing, too, with icon relationships is it's not so much that you have this actual personal relationship
with the
icon. It's that you're able to draw some sort of benefit or
But you could. I mean, if you're one unique thing tied into it, yeah.
I think it would be interesting to have a positive relationship with her because she has a very favorable opinion of you and you don't know why.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Like, she's always been nice to me. I don't know what you guys are talking about, but I don't know why.
And that could even become a little bit of a campaign arc.
Mm-hmm. We're getting to the end of the episode where we'll talk about our different campaign arcs, but let's kind of touch on one last thing. What kind of monsters would you bring as the GM to a game that had to deal with the Diabolist? For me, one of my favorite things about D&D is the Blood War. This idea of the demons and the devils have been at war since before the Dragon Empire was around, like before the Prime Material Plane existed. Law and chaotic evil have been just smashing. And so I had this idea of I would use more devils than demons, in a way where maybe the devils who are a little bit more organized are like, cool, this adventuring group, they're getting powerful enough that if we played this right, we could point them right at some of the demons we want taken out. And so you have a couple of fight with devils who leave enough clues or are using enough trickery to then point to a hellhole that they want the players to eradicate, kind of a enemy of my enemy is a useful tool for me to wield. I think that's how the saying goes.
Straight up the old Crusaders way.
Yeah, exactly. So what about you guys? I mean, obviously demons, right? Like, can we all agree?
Right.
Yeah, okay, cool. So
I probably, just as a way of further sowing chaos and uncertainty among the players, I would introduce essentially every monster in the books as a potential demon, and roll on the random demon tables to, you know, play that out a little bit, have them all have the red glowing eyes or what have you, so they all know that these are demons, but don't limit my choices to just the ones that have the demon label in the books.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because as chaos erupts and as the demons erupt from the hell holes, they have a tendency of absorbing or looking like whatever creatures are is in that immediate surrounding. So I would just leverage that to a T.
Yeah, I mean, they mentioned that when the hellhole erupts, if it's like in the forest, you might get a lot of corrupted trees and that kind of a thing. So, yeah, demons and to plug another product from Pelgrane, there's a helpful chart in 13th Age Glorantha. Just the random demons all don't look the same. They come with a description just to give you something of an idea. Doesn't mean they can't be different. I mean, it's chaos. They should look different. They're not devils. Devils are all the same because they're
very lawful.
Yeah, lawful by, you know, canon. That's just the way devils are. They're all the same. They're nice armies by ranks and everything. And demons, it's just a mob.
Right.
And they should look all different. So, yeah, there's great ways to just vary it up. So, and there's no reason why the barmaid can't be a demon in disguise.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into our take on an iconic campaign. So, my idea is taken from a They Might Be Giants song. I don't know if you guys know Anna Ang, the song. There's a line in it that says, I don't want the world. I just want your half. And... So my idea is you get your five icons. And so obviously it's the Diabolist, the Crusader, the Great Gold Worm, the Priestess, and then one other icon. And demons are shapeshifters. We've established that they are changing. And so if we go off my idea that the Diabolist is out for personal revenge, at some point that fifth icon is the Diabolist as well. Like she has succeeded in capturing. What if the Prince of Shadows is the Diabolist? How does that change basically the entire campaign? And so the group is working towards, in the adventuring tier, they're running kind of standard 13th Age missions tied to the icons, doing go find me 10 boar heads. Why don't all these boars have heads? You know,
but they had a sword.
But they had a sword lodged in their leg. And as they're going through this, we start to catch glimpses that one of the icons isn't behaving the way they should. And a little bit more demonic activity is being thrown into there. And in the champion tier, maybe this is where I involve the devils. They start to see, hey, there is this war and devils seem to be pointed at the dwarf king. Like, why is that? And the devils don't want to talk about it. They're bound by their rules, right? You know, we set up the rules of the gates so that the devils can't come out and say, here is what's going on, because that's not lawful for whatever reason. Some deal that the Diabolist made at the start of the 13th Age. But they're able to point the PCs in the right directions to where they rebuild the story of what happened at the end of the 12th Age. And this is kind of a, at the end of the age, like the 14th Age is coming up. So they go and they have everything pointing towards this one icon is corrupted, is the Diabolist. Maybe at the end of the champion tier, they confront this agent of the icon, and it could really go either way. It would be, I think it would be hysterical if the Diabolist had set this all up to kill her rival. Cool. Congratulations, adventurers. You've just murdered, you know, the elf queen. now what happens in the epic tier. But I feel like the epic tier can revolve around either the fallout of that replacement or death, or what did the Diabolus do? Why is she trying to corrupt the High Druid? And I keep throwing out ideas for different icons because I feel like the choice of a fifth icon could radically shift how the whole campaign goes. But then at the end, do the PCs make it in time? Do they, is the icon corrupted? Did she successfully corrupt the Emperor? If that's the case and the age is coming to a close, that's two chaotic icons, two icons that are associated with demons. What has to happen then? What, like, do the PCs step up into some roles? Do they end up ushering in a new age of demons? You know, what is the fallout? And that's kind of where the epic tier would revolve around.
A lot of subterfuge and finding things out. And
I feel like demons being shapeshifters and chaotic, they're very protean, if you will. Things should not necessarily always be as they seem.
Yeah. And, you know, again, going back a few systems, devils are lawful. They tell you the truth. Maybe not all the truth, or they'll try to bend it some way. Demons out and out lie. You can't trust anything they say.
Even when they're telling you the truth.
Even when they're telling you, you're not sure. Devils, there should be a kernel of truth in what they're saying.
They're like,
maybe they're admitting a lot to get you to do something.
Yeah.
But they just won't lie. That's not their nature. So yeah, demons, a lot of twisties.
Yeah. And I feel like that lying should extend to form and reality as well.
Yeah. I like the way that you were kind of left that last icon up in the air, because that's something that you could even take to your gaming group and say, hey, look, I want to run this campaign. I've got this idea. I've got some of the icons that I want to use. What do you guys think I should use for this other one?
Well, and even if like nobody wants to be involved with the Great Gold Worm, all right, fine. Like I don't need, or the game doesn't need to have that involved. It's just kind of the traditional enemy. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
You can always just leave it blank too and have them pick from the other icons. And then as it develops,
right,
usually one of them will fall into place just because 6 months from now it pops in your head. Yeah, it really should be the High Druid.
Yeah. Cool.
Just the way it plays out.
All right, Nick, what's your idea?
So again, kind of building on the idea of the Diabolus that I've been kind of talking about, just that she's largely misunderstood. The campaign arc that I was thinking was just kind of... You start out with a lot of scenes of demons and the players believing that the Diabolus is fully evil and they're trying to work against her. I would sprinkle through a lot of encounters with different agents of the Diabolus performing rituals to create hell holes. And then the players trying to, you know, stop them or whatever they determine is the appropriate response to that. But essentially spread the seeds of belief that she is trying to bring the demons and hell into the Dragon Empire and spread chaos and destruction throughout the entire place. And then in the champion tier, I would start to cast doubts on some of those seeds. Maybe at times it appears like she's, you know, they come across another group of Diabolists who, instead of summoning or performing a ritual to summon a hellhole, they're there trying to fight back the demons that have erupted from it, and start putting a little bit of a twist on it that maybe her reasons and her motivations and what she's trying to accomplish are actually a little bit more altruistic than what they had believed them to be. Have that tier kind of end in some sort of epiphany that she's actually trying to vent this chaotic energy and destruction in small controlled ways to prevent the larger eruption that there's a big bad demon on the other side is trying to break free. And if she can keep everything vented just right, then the big bad demon won't have enough power to actually break free. And then early in the epic tier, I would have the Diabolus somehow be slain, either through an agent or working of this demon or some just bad timed accident. And now the adventuring party is left with the responsibility of, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to take up this mantle and this responsibility and try to stop this demon and hell from breaking free? Or are we going to try to get one of the other icons to take care of it? Or what's going to happen? And then really just have that epic tier end in that massive eruption. or at least the breaking of that, you know, either they're going to maybe go down into hell through one of the hell holes and defeat this big bad demon, or they're going to find some way of putting a cap on that attempt.
Cool. So what do you do if one of the players wants to become step into that mantle? Have you thought about that?
At the epic tier, I think that that's a pretty common, in my opinion, as I've read through the different takes and such on the 13th Age, I think that a lot of campaign arcs end in one of the icons passing away or dropping off the picture or being replaced or something like that. That's a pretty common, very tropish thing, which is fully embodiment of the 13th Age system. And I would let them run with it.
Okay.
And obviously, you know, once you hit that epic tier, you don't have a lot of really gameplay time left before they finally hit that last level. And then, I mean, that's it. You'd kind of put a cap on it and maybe do some sort of decade montage of, okay, what's happened with your characters after this point. Now, I would say that if one of the players wanted to step into that role, they would have to be tainted, or they would become tainted as time progressed, eventually looking just like the Diabolist looks today.
What about your idea? What do you got?
It's going to end very similar, maybe because we just kick around the ideas and things pop in your head as you do stuff. The adventure tier starts out, some minor encounters, no reason. Like you said, you kind of start on the normal whatever missions for the icons or that come up. Lots of published stuff out there. And then at the champion tiers, they get more powerful. They do some hellhole exploration, maybe a more difficult fetch mission, either for a person or a thing that's in a town that's become a hellhole, maybe even cleansing of a small one that maybe just started where it's vulnerable, and boom, we're right there. We can go and stop this from becoming a full-blown fortress. In that exploration, they find information maybe leading to some of the Diabolist's plans for Icon X to take them out, supplant them, ruin them. And then so as it goes into the epic tier, they're stopping some hellhole expansions, maybe closing some down, some major battles. And in that epic tier, they're going to stop that icon death. Or that's the idea, is to try to stop it. And it could be the Crusader, it could be the Priestess or somebody. And in stopping it, and I showed JM the note, they take out the Diabolist and one of them has to become the new Diabolist. Mm.
What if it's the person who hits the final blow?
That would be perfect. Doesn't matter. You're a paladin of the Crusader. Great. Now you're the Diabolist.
Yep. You've inherited that mantle by
by being. I mean, it's just because being that close to her and striking her, you're tainted, and you have to. You know, it's kind of just
sounds like a great one unique thing for the Diabolist. I used to be a paladin,
and then I said, then you just move on. You can start a new campaign, and the old character is now the Diabolist, and maybe the players know, but the characters wouldn't know who that is. You know, there's been a shakeup, something like that. I like the idea of replacing it. Kind of, there always has to be one. It's just always good. Again, once you reach the end, what do you do? So why not end it epically? Hey, you're the new, or maybe they both die. And okay, now you're the Priestess and I'm the Diabolist.
Mm. Well,
we used to adventure together, and you still want to try to save me, and I'm out because I'm just crazy now.
So it just made me think, if my idea of personal revenge works, then what if once the Diabolist finishes their act of revenge and kills or taints the icon of their choice, then that mantle has to pass, like her personal revenge. So she tries to sell one of the PCs, basically, hey, that thing happened to you. Here you go.
I'm done. I'm gonna live in the abyss.
I'm gonna go do, well, no, not even in the abyss. Like, I'm done. Like, the mantle fulfilled, like, I fulfilled what I wanted to. My revenge is over.
And she just fades away into nothing.
And that mantle passes to somebody else.
So the role of Diabolist is directly tied to some core,
like, hatred. Yeah. Some motivation. Like core hatred or revenge motivation. Wow. And something set that up, because that would make a great follow up campaign. Yeah. Oh, crap. Now, why is it that the way it works? So,
and you could do that, kind of pick out of your group somebody's one unique thing and say, okay, that's going to be the hatred we're going to.
Yeah.
And hopefully they don't die in the champion tier. Like, okay. All right. Now it's your guy. But yeah, you can pull out of their one unique thing and
kind of go.
They become.
It. Or just wait and see at the end who it fits. And if it doesn't fit any of them, maybe the mantle passes to someone unknown. And that's the next game. You run the rise of the new Diabolist. Mm,
their favorite NPC.
Yeah, it's got to be their favorite NPC. Once you give them a name, it's all downhill from there. Well, any final thoughts on the Diabolist or an iconic campaign? We'll probably revisit this with different icon ideas going forward.
Sure.
I'd say if you have any ideas or if you're currently using the Diabolist as one of the major icons in your campaign, let us know. Hit us up in the comments or shoot us an email.
And as always, thank you to Pelgrane Press and Petri's Family Games for being sponsors of the show. And if you want to support the show, please hit our site, use our Amazon referral link, or find us on Patreon.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.